In many ways, modern man, Homo sapiens, is a stranger to Earth. Ever since Charles Darwin shocked the scholars and theologians of his time with the evidence of evolution, life on Earth has been traced through man and the primates, mammals, and vertebrates, and backward through ever lower life forms to the point billions of years ago at which life is presumed to have begun. But having reached these beginnings and having begun to contemplate the probabilities of life elsewhere in our solar system and beyond, the scholars have become uneasy about life on Earth. Somehow it doesn't belong here. If it began through a series of spontaneous chemical reactions, why does life on Earth have but a single source and not a multitude of chance sources? And why does all living matter on Earth contain too little of the chemical elements that abound on Earth and too much of those that are rare on our planet? Was life, then, imported to Earth from elsewhere? Man's position in this evolutionary chain has compounded the puzzle. Finding a broken skull here, a jaw there, scholars at first believed that man originated in Asia some 500,000 years ago. But as older fossils were found, it became evident that the mills of evolution grind much, much slower. Man's ancestor apes are now placed at a staggering 25 million years ago. Discoveries in East Africa reveal a transition to man-like apes some 14 million years ago. It was about 11 million years later that the first ape man worthy of classification Homo appeared there. The first being considered to be truly man-like existed in the same part of Africa some 2 million years ago. It took yet another million years to produce Homo erectus. Finally, another 900,000 years for the first primitive man to appear. He is named Neanderthal after the site where his remains were first found. In spite of the passage of more than 2 million years between advanced Australopithecus and Neanderthal, the tools of the two groups, sharp stones, were virtually alike, and the groups themselves were hardly distinguishable. Then suddenly and inexplicably, some 35,000 years ago, Homo sapiens appeared as if from nowhere and swept Neanderthal man from the face of Earth. These modern men, named Cro-Magnon, look so much like us that if dressed like us in modern clothes, they would be lost in the crowds of any European or American city. Because of the magnificent cave art which they created, they were at first called cavemen. In fact, they roamed the Earth freely, for they knew how to build shelters and homes of stone and animal skins wherever they went. For millions of years, man's tools had been simple stones of useful shapes. Cro-Magnon man, however, made specialized tools and weapons of wood and bones. He was no longer a naked ape or used skins for clothing. His society was organized. He lived in clans with a patriarchal hegemony. His cave drawings bespeak artistry and depth of feeling. His drawings and sculptures evidence some form of religion apparent in the worship of a mother goddess, who was sometimes depicted with the sign of the moon's crescent. He buried his dead, and must therefore have had some philosophies regarding life, death, and perhaps even an afterlife. As mysterious and unexplained as the appearance of Cro-Magnon man has been, the puzzle is still more complicated, for, as other remains of modern man were discovered, it became apparent that Cro-Magnon man stemmed from an even earlier Homo sapiens, who lived in Western Asia and North Africa some 250,000 years before Cro-Magnon man. The appearance of modern man a mere 700,000 years before Homo erectus and some 200,000 years before Neanderthal man is absolutely implausible. It is also clear that Homo sapiens represent such an extreme departure from the slow evolutionary processes that many of our features, such as our ability to speak, are totally unrelated to earlier primates. An outstanding authority in the subject, Professor Theodosius Dobzhansky, was especially puzzled by the fact that this development took place during a period when Earth was going through an ice age, a most unpropitious time for evolutionary advance. Pointing out that Homo sapiens lacks completely some of the peculiarities of the previously known types and has some that never appeared before, he concluded, "Modern man has many fossil collateral relatives, but no progenitors. The derivation of Homo sapiens, then, becomes a puzzle." How, then, did the ancestors of modern man appear some 300,000 years ago instead of 2 million or 3 million years in the future following further evolutionary development? Were we imported to earth from elsewhere? Or were we, as the Old Testament and other ancient sources claim, created by the gods? We now know where civilization began and how it developed once it began. The unanswered question is, why? Why did civilization come about at all? For as most scholars now admit in frustration, by all data, man should still be without civilization. There's no obvious reason that we should be any more civilized than the primitive tribes of the Amazon jungles or the inaccessible parts of New Guinea. But we are told these tribesmen still live as if in the Stone Age because they've all been isolated. But isolated from what? If they've been living on the same earth as we, why have they not acquired the same knowledge of sciences and technologies on their own as we supposedly have? The real puzzle, however, is not the backwardness of the Bushmen, but our advancement, for it's now recognized that in the normal course of evolution, man should still be typified by the Bushmen and not by us. It took man some 2 million years to advance in his tool industries from the use of stones as he found them to the realization that he could chip and shape stones to better suit his purposes. Why not another 2 million years to learn to use other materials and another 10 million years to master mathematics and engineering and astronomy? Yet here we are, less than 50,000 years from Neanderthal man landing astronauts on the moon. The obvious question then is this: did we and our Mediterranean ancestors really acquire this advanced civilization on our own? Though Cro-Magnon man did not build skyscrapers nor use metals, there is no doubt that his was a sudden and revolutionary civilization. His mobility, ability to build shelters, his desire to clothe himself, his manufactured tools, his art, were all sudden high civilization breaking an endless beginning of man's culture that stretched over millions of years and advanced at a painfully slow pace. Though our scholars cannot explain the appearance of Homo sapiens and the civilization of Cro-Magnon man, there is by now no doubt regarding the civilization's place of origin, the Near East. The uplands and mountain ranges that extend in a semi-arc from the Sargos Mountains in the east, where present-day Iran and Iraq border each other, through Ararat and Taurus ranges in the north, then down, westward and southward, to the hill lands of Syria, Lebanon, and Israel, are replete with caves where the evidence of prehistoric but modern man have been preserved. One of these caves, Shanidar, is located in the northeastern part of the semi-arc of civilization. Nowadays, fierce Kurdish tribesmen seek shelter in the area's caves for themselves and their flocks during the cold winter months. So it was one wintry night 44,000 years ago when a family of 7 sought shelter in the cave at Shanidar. Their remains? They were evidently crushed to death by a rockfall we discovered in 1957 by a startled Ralph Solecki, who went to the area in search of evidence of early man. What he found was more than he expected. As layer upon layer of debris was removed, it became apparent that the cave preserved a clear record of man's habitation in the area from about 100,000 to some 13,000 years ago. What this record showed was as surprising as the find itself. Man's culture has shown not a progression, but a regression. Starting from a certain standard, the following generation showed not more advanced, but less advanced standards of civilized life. And from about 27,000 BC to 11,000 BC, the regressing and dwindling population reached the point of an almost complete absence of habitation. For reasons that are assumed to have been climatic, man was almost completely gone from the whole area for some 16,000 years. And then around 11,000 BC, thinking man reappeared with new vigor and on an inexplicably higher cultural level. It was as if an unseen coach, watching the faltering human game, dispatched to the field a fresh and better trained team to take over from the exhausted one. Throughout the many millions of years of his endless beginning, man was nature's child. He subsisted by gathering foods that grew wild, by hunting the wild animals, by catching wild birds and fishes. But just as man's settlements were thinning out, just as he was abandoning his abodes, when his material and artistic achievements were disappearing, just then, suddenly, with no apparent reason, and without any prior known period of gradual preparation, man became a farmer. Agriculture began exactly where thinking man had emerged earlier with his first crude civilization, in the Near East. Man's first farming venture was the cultivation of wheat and barley. However, scholars remain baffled by the profusion of other plants and cereals basic to human survival and the advancement that kept coming out of the Near East. These included, in rapid succession, millet, rye, and spelt. Among the edible cereals, flax, which provided fibers and edible oil, and a variety of fruit-bearing shrubs and trees. In every instance, the plant was undoubtedly domesticated in the Near East for millennia before it reached Europe. It was as though the Near East was some kind of a genetic botanical laboratory, guided by an unseen hand. The general location of Eden was certainly known to the biblical generations. It was east of the land of Israel, in a land watered by four major rivers, two of which are the Tigris and the Euphrates. The Bible, like the scholars, places the start of vine cultivation in the mountains of northern Mesopotamia. Apples, pears, olives, figs, almonds, pistachios, walnuts, all originated in the Near East and spread from there to other parts of the world. We cannot help recalling that the Old Testament preceded our scholars in identifying the very same area as the world's first orchard, the Garden of Eden. The book of Genesis located the first orchard in northeastern Mesopotamia. Bible and science are in full agreement. Science tells us that the process went from wild grasses to wild cereals to cultivated cereals, followed by fruit-bearing shrubs and trees. This is exactly the process detailed in the first chapter of the book of Genesis. And the Lord said, "Let the earth bring forth grasses, cereals that by seeds produce seeds, fruit trees that bear fruit by species, which contain the seeds within themselves." And it was so. From an overall point of view, it would be appropriate to call the age that began about 11,000 B.C. not the Middle Stone Age, but the Age of Domestication. Within the span of a mere 3,600 years, man became a farmer, and wild plants and animals were domesticated. Then a new age clearly followed with the appearance of pottery, for reasons that still elude our scholars, but which will become clear as we unfold our tale of prehistoric events here. Man's march towards civilization was confined to the highlands of the Near East. The discovery of the many uses to which clay could be put was contemporary with man's descent from his mountain abodes. By the 7th millennium B.C., the Near Eastern arc of civilization was teeming with clay or pottery cultures. But once again, progress slowed, and by 4500 B.C., archaeological evidence indicates regression was all around. Pottery became simpler. Stone utensils, a relic of the Stone Age, again became predominant. Inhabited sites reveal fewer remains. Some sites that had been centers of pottery and clay industries began to be abandoned, and distinct clay manufacturing disappeared. Man and his culture were clearly on the decline. Then suddenly, unexpectedly, inexplicably, the Near East witnessed the blossoming of the greatest civilization imaginable, a civilization in which our own is firmly rooted. A mysterious hand once more picked man out of his decline and raised him to an even higher level of culture, knowledge, and civilization. For a long time, Western man believed that his civilization was